WPHM now presents Paul Miller's Week in Review.
Well, hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. Another busy week on the WPHM Morning Show. On Wednesday morning, we spoke with Brian Kelly. He used to be the Lieutenant Governor of Michigan. Now he heads up the Small Business Association of Michigan. We talked about some of the concerns that small business owners have right now in the current economy.
Thanks for the important discussion around small businesses. They are the main job providers in most communities across the state. And when they're saying they're struggling, people ought to really pay attention.
Well, absolutely. Their big concern right now is about not just the rising cost of everything, but also finding really good quality talent to work.
That's right. It's kind of a double whammy that's hitting small businesses right now. The first is that costs across the board are rising, and part of it is in connection to finding people to fuel the growth. And so raising benefits, raising pay, it's what small businesses are doing, but it also means that the cost underneath the entire operation is rising. So they're saying, look, we're having a hard time finding people, but also we're having a hard time growing because costs are rising so much. And one of the things that one of the red flags in the overall cost increases is the cost of healthcare. Many businesses have, it's upwards of $2,000 per employee. And if you think about a company that has 20 or 30 employees, you know, it's a small business. But when you do the math on that, you can see why they say they're really struggling, because that comes out, just the healthcare increases is about the cost of a new employee. And so it means they can't grow. And that's what I think is concerning for the economy at a macro level, the overall economy, is that when small businesses are experiencing the types of impediments to growth, that means the economy will suffer.
We're about a year into the Earned Sick Time Act. What impact has that had on small businesses in Michigan?
Most small businesses are saying that it has had a negative impact. It was about 59% said it's had a negative impact on their business. We heard from a lot of businesses that said, you know, administratively it's difficult. My benefits already exceeded that which was required by the government. But there's the ones that we're hearing the most concern for are the ones that need to keep on operating even at times that are inconvenient for workers. So healthcare organizations, for example, that still need to provide services on holidays. What they experienced last year was a spike in people calling in sick around the holidays. In fact, we had one of our providers that does home health care services shared with us that they had about 900 hours of Earned Sick Time Act used over last year, but over 300 of those hours were just in the last 2 weeks of the year between December 15th, December 31st. And it's difficult to run a business when you have that type of benefit mandate, and there's really no option for accountability. You just, as a business owner, you just have to suck it up and move on.
We're talking with Brian Kelly, President and CEO of the Small Business Association of Michigan. Obviously, some red flags and some concern in this survey. There are some bright spots, though, too, aren't there?
There are. The first thing is optimism from small business owners. These are optimistic folks by nature, and what we're finding is that that even in light of these changes, about 6 in 10 small business owners say they're still optimistic about the survival of their business. They're gonna figure this out one way or another. And then another is the adoption of technology. So sometimes innovation, it comes from struggles, and we have seen a very, very steep increase in the number of businesses that are saying they're using artificial intelligence to improve their operations, improve their efficiency, to allow them to grow without experiencing the same costs that they're struggling with everywhere else in the business. So there are a few things to look at. I expect that in a good economy or a bad economy, or anything in between, the main thing going, the most important part, are small businesses. They are the main job providers and the economic infrastructure of communities all across this country, but especially in Michigan.
What, Brian, are they doing to try and stay afloat in this difficult economy right now?
We asked them questions about how they're feeling, you know, optimism, but we also ask what they're doing. And so we ask the question about recession, for example. Are you taking steps to prepare for a recession? It's one thing to say if you think there's going to be one or not, but do you think it enough to be taking steps? And most, well over half of small businesses are taking steps like hiring freezes, trying to reduce overall expenses in the business in relation to, and then delaying capital expenditures, those being the top three answers, in relation to their concerns about the future. So yeah, they're optimistic about the survival of their business. In order to survive, they are reducing costs. They are being more conservative on new hires, and they are delaying capital expenditures in order to create a more they give themselves more options for the future to retain additional liquidity and to give the business the best shot at success no matter where the economy goes.
It's not easy being a small business owner, but we've been here before. We've seen tough times. They tend to survive. Again, like I said, not easy, but you know, banding together, networking really helps, doesn't it?
It does. Small business owners are ingrained in their communities. And I think that's the thing to really keep in mind is that they're the ones that we call when we need something, and they're supporters of the community. They're invested in the community. The owners of the business live in the community. There's a lot of reasons to, that small business owners are the most trusted voice in American society today. And Gallup polls say that they are. There, but we can't take them for granted. And I think it is important that we go out of our way to support small businesses as much as we can, to think about our purchases. Is there somebody local? Is there somebody who's running a business and supporting the community where I live that could fulfill this need for you as a consumer or another business? And if the answer is yes, going out of your way to make that happen is a really good investment in your community, an investment in the future economy of Michigan.
Brian Kelly with the Small Business Association of Michigan with us on the morning show this past week on WPHM. House Republicans in Lansing have an energy reform plan they're working on, one aimed at lowering utility bills in Michigan. We talked about it with Republican State Representative Jay DeBoyer on Monday.
It's Project Lighthouse. The Republicans in the House have recognized, by the way, we recognized 2 or 3 years ago, that the path of wind and solar alone in the state of Michigan in the northern climate is an impossibility with regard to providing the electrical demand that we need. So what this bill package does, which was introduced by Representative Wenzel, who's the chair of energy, it does a couple things. It repeals the 2023 mandate, which was the requirement of, you know, wind, solar, renewable at darn near 100% capacity in the next, 10 to 12 years, which every individual who doesn't even have to be an energy expert realizes that in the next 10 to 12 years, in order to provide the power for the state of Michigan through wind and solar is it's not just virtually impossible, Paul. It's absolutely impossible. Mm-hmm. The infrastructure alone could not be built out in a timeline fast enough to be able to do it. So it's a pipe dream. So this, it repeals that. Okay. But that's only a very small piece of what it does. Our grid and our infrastructure, needs attention. It's falling behind. And the reason it's falling behind is because when you look at the mandates that have been put in place for this wind and solar, that's kind of a different infrastructure that you have to invest lots of money in infrastructure to be able to service and feed that. So what is happening is your mainline service infrastructure is being neglected. Again, because billions and billions and billions of dollars is being spent on this green energy mandate. And so this bill also prioritizes the reliability of that grid, the operational cost of that grid. It changes the Michigan Public Service Commission priorities from are we mandating green energy to are we building a reliable, predictable, and safe infrastructure. It also does another thing that most of your listeners are probably totally unaware of. The MPSC actually skims some dollars off of your utility bill and then turns it over to green energy activist organizations that then can be used to lobby against you and me when we push back on rate increases at the MPSC. It's the most convoluted process that I've ever seen in my entire life. It absolutely bans that practice because that's contributing to your rates. So that's a quick nutshell. There's a little more detail we can get into here, Paul, but that gives you a quick nutshell of what we're trying to do. It also gets, it addresses directly the problem of cost. As you're aware, there's also a tax package that we have introduced that's going to get moved through the House at some point that finally finishes off that personal property tax elimination, which we started a number of years ago to do. One of the entities that will get some sort of a benefit from that personal property tax elimination will be the utilities. And, you know, I know my first reaction to that would be, well, that's great. Are they really going to pass that savings along to the end user? Well, what this does, it puts in statute that those reductions in costs must be directly credited back. So you would see an immediate shift of the elimination of about $1 billion in rate increases in the state of Michigan over the last 3 to 4 years, 2 to 3 years, would roll right back to a utility baseline cost because of that elimination of that tax.
Jay, is this package going to address at all the issue that we had here in St. Clair County where there are proposed solar projects that the state has said, no, you absolutely have to do this even if the local government doesn't want it?
Yeah, so I can't go right to the nuance of those specific cases, but what I can tell you on the broad scale of this bill package is essentially yes, it will move that control for zoning and those kinds of things back into the local. It controls. It's a complete elimination of some of those packages that were passed when there was a unified government of all Democrats, you know, Senate, House, and governor. It will roll that back, but it doesn't just eliminate that stuff. It replaces it with things that makes the production of energy, the distribution of energy, and the taxing of energy different than it is today.
And you say this is ultimately going to save Michiganders money on their utility bills.
Absolutely. So the first thing is on the tax piece. The tax piece is going to be directly, and it's in the statute that any cost saving because of this taxation reduction, it's not just utilities that are going to get paid tax savings reduction, but that's what we're talking about. So it applies here. That will be mandated that savings goes directly back to the consumers in a rate reduction. That will be in the statute. But reliability, right? Reliable power matters. Dependability matters. And we have spent billions and billions of dollars on energy production types that have done but nothing but drive up the cost of your energy in Michigan. We're going to go back to, you know, clean natural gas as a priority. You got to remember that under their green plan, natural gas isn't even considered as a clean energy. So that's going to be a mandated. You might have noticed or heard that we are reestablishing a nuclear reactor in the Palisades in West Michigan. The first nuclear reactor that's ever been, what's the right way to say it, unmothballed to come back to clean energy, to produce energy for the state of Michigan. And I'm going to tell you, we had some circumstances this winter when we were in the middle of the cold spells that, you know, off the record, utility companies were a little bit nervous. They were nervous. They were doing things like calling large industrial facilities saying, hey, if we need you guys to back off on your energy consumption so we can prevent rolling blackouts or brownouts, would you be willing to do that for us? That's something that most people don't hear about, Paul. That's how concerning this energy production for the people of the state of Michigan are. And I would argue that this bill is 100% pro-consumer and 100% anti-government intervention with regard to telling you how you have to get your electricity.
Do you think you'll be able to get Democrats on board with this? Will this be something you can get bipartisan support for?
Actually, I do think you will get some bipartisan support. With regard to the governor signing it, I can give you speculatively what I've heard. I think that the governor knows that this is a problem, although it might not fit her political party's narrative with regard to energy. But if you've been paying attention recently, Governor Whitmer, seems to be in a position on a number of topics that at least she's allowing reality to come into her decision making on whether she's going to support it or not. And I think that this is probably going to be one of those things that if it lands on her desk and we can get enough support in the Democrat-controlled Senate to pass it, I think you would see the governor sign it.
State Representative Jay DeBoyer with us this past week on WPHM. Well, now that winter is behind us, it's time to start thinking spring and summer. And once again, the PGA Tour will be making a stop in Detroit for the Rocket Classic. The tournament director is Mark Hollis, the former Michigan State athletic director who grew up in this area, proud graduate of Croslex High School.
Well, good morning. It's great to talk back to my homeland. Growing up around Port Huron up there in Lexington, it's one of my favorite spots and get up there every year.
Well, absolutely. Although your summer gets pretty busy with the Rocket Classic. July 30th is when things kick off, and tickets are going to go on sale soon, aren't they?
They're going to go on sale right after the Masters, and really I think that's a time a lot of folks start thinking about golf and the tour. And, you know, Dan Gilbert brought the PGA Tour to the city of Detroit. It's one of only two PGA Tour stops that are in urban areas. It's at the beautiful Detroit Golf Club that just underwent a $16 million renovation. So the guys that come out and play, they're going to see a different course than they've seen in the past. As you mentioned, with tickets, we've made a lot of changes this year. And one is we've gone from perhaps one of the most expensive tour stops as far as grounds tickets to one of the most affordable. And the goal is this is the community's event, and we want the community out there, and we're taking away all the obstacles.
That is fantastic news, especially in an era when everything seems to be going up in price. How were you able to bring prices down?
Well, it's something I did at Michigan State when I was the athletic director there, and it's first of all listening. You know, what are the challenges? What are folks saying? And it was a lot of really sitting down and listening. But when you look at, you know, supply and demand, if you can bring prices down, is betting on the come that more people are going to come out, and that helps you balance out your budgets. And that's what our goal is to do is this is a 501c3 charitable event. We've put over $10 million into the community, most of that focused on digital inclusion in Detroit. You know, since COVID, we've flipped the script on Detroit residents having the connectivity, having the equipment, having the education to do all the things that many folks take for granted. And frankly, this tournament drove that at the beginning and continues to, and that's what we're proud of. So the more folks that come out, the more help we can give our community partners, our neighbors, those that live with us here in the city of Detroit.
Your pricing for the first round on Thursday made me smile because of the 313 in Detroit. First round tickets, $31.30.
Yeah, I got to tell you, you know, I don't have a lot of good ideas, but I do listen to other people, and I'm going to give Nick Barledge, who is the with the Cleveland Cavaliers, he threw that number out, and I was like, yeah, that's a good idea. And so it's if you can listen, you can be a lot smarter than you ever think, and that's what I do most of my time on is listening and then figuring out ways to make people happy.
There you go. These are not bad prices at all, $31.30 on Thursday, $48 on Friday, $58 for Saturday and Sunday. That's amazing.
It is, and our goal, we're going to run those through an advance period of time that goes through June 15th, and then prices will still be lower than last year, but they'll go up a little bit as you get closer to the event, and that's just an approach that we're going to take to try and make sure we know. And a lot, it's, you're building a city on a golf course, right? So a lot of the decision-making is based on the demand that comes in, not only from grounds tickets, but also from all the hospitality areas. And if we can have a good sense, yeah, around the 1st of June, then there are things that we can tweak and make bigger, make smaller, depending on what the appetite is for the community.
Obviously, this event would not be a success if the players didn't enjoy coming to Detroit for it. And I get the sense that the guys on the tour really enjoy being in Detroit for the Rocket Classic.
They do, and the date helps us on two fronts. One, it's a great date for the players. There's only one event now between us and the FedEx Cup playoffs. So the guys that want to stay in the playoffs or are trying to get into it, this becomes the last chance to pick up those points. More importantly, this is a cottage state. Around the 4th of July, when we've traditionally been playing, you know, folks like to be in the Thumb, Caseville. They like to be in Lexington, Port Huron, or up north. And now we're in a period of time here at the end of July, as you mentioned, July 30th through August 2nd, where we're spending a little bit more time down here. We're starting to get ready for, you know, back to school and the like. So we think for fans and for players, this is an ideal date for us to launch into some success this year. I will note, while I can't give you any breaking news today, we had an unbelievable recruiting weekend down at the Players this week. We've lined up with 10 of the top players already, and we'll be making those announcements as we move forward here.
Mark Hollis with the Rocket Classic. Well, if you're interested in learning more about law enforcement, the Port Huron Police Department Citizen Police Academy is about to begin. Port Huron Police Officer Sam Baker stopped by with one of his graduates to talk about it.
This is our annual program, an opportunity for the community, the citizens, to come in and learn about law enforcement, but more specifically about the Port Huron Police Department. Mm-hmm. So, we're kicking off registration, and I'm here to talk to you a little bit about it.
Well, let's talk about it. And lest you think only a couple of people show up for this, it's really gained in popularity, hasn't it?
Yeah. Every year, and this has been going on 25 years plus now. This is not a new program.
Right.
And in the 10 years I've been here, it's always a packed class. But the last few years that I've been teaching it, we've had north of 30, 35 people per class. So it's very heavily attended. And it's a really good time, if I say so myself. We're going to actually kind of try to limit it a little bit this year. We're advertising 20. Mm-hmm. I can probably push it to 25 attendees for the class. Reason being is we don't want to short the conversation or the questions or rush people through the segments. So the higher numbers in the last few years, we've noticed that, me personally, I just felt that we're kind of looking just to clean it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. So registration's still open. We still got some spots available. And it's going to run from April 2nd to April 30th. So that's every Thursday in April. We're going to meet from 6 to 9 p.m. right at the City Building, completely free to attend. It's open to anybody in the county, but City of Port Huron residents kind of take priority. So if I end up with a huge stack, I got to start with the city residents. And got to be 18 or older, pass a background check, no felony convictions, and it's a good time.
One of your graduates is joining us right now, Janet Hazard. Janet, good morning.
Good morning.
What made you decide you wanted to take the Citizens Police Academy training?
I was retired, and I had some relatives who were in volunteers in police service, mm-hmm. and I have a couple relatives who have been in law enforcement, so it's something I've always kind of had an interest in, and it came up, and I signed up for it late in 2019, so we all know what happened, COVID.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't graduate until 21. It's just a fun way to represent the police department in the city and just kind of be eyes and ears for.
What did you get out of the training? What was your?
It's fascinating. Yeah. Everybody that goes through it, I've heard say it's just so interesting what you learn. The inside workings of the police department and what they have to deal with is unbelievable. It's very eye opening. We get to do a little hands on training kind of stuff. It was so fun and I can't recommend it enough. And like I said, we've got graduates, like Sam was saying earlier, we've got graduates that have gone on to become police officers. I remember there's one that said she wants to eventually work for the FBI. Hmm. I mean, it can be whatever you want it to be, you know, just something to do for the community or a stepping stone for your career.
What do you think is the most interesting part of this for people to take it?
I think it's just that. I think people only know what they know, right? Yeah. So you see police work on TV or you see things on the media, and there's so much more to it than that.
I'm Paul Miller. See you 6 till 10, Monday through Fridays on WPHM.